paying private school education for University of Vanguard experience. That's rough. Yeah. I mean, lucky for us, he already graduated, so he's only got a couple of master's classes left to get his master's, so tuition is manageable, but yeah, I hear you. Good. Knock on wood. He signed a job offer 6 months ago. Yep. And now he's got a 2-week internship that he starts today. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And then at the end, he also gets a job offer there, so he can weigh his options. But he has to start studying for the CPA exam.
At this time, I'd like to call to order our regular scheduled city council meeting for July 14th, the successor agency, the Staunton Housing Authority meeting. Before we do that, is there anything to report out of closed session, Mr. Attorney? Okay, thank you. Madam Clerk, roll call, please.
Here.
Here.
Thank you. Also at this time, if you do have a cell phone, please silence it so it doesn't go off. And Mr. Ramirez, would you lead us in the pledge?
Yeah, certainly. Please all rise and face the flag and repeat after me. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
Thank you, Regal. Okay, this evening we do not have any special presentations or awards. So we'll now move to the consent calendar. If there's any, is there any wish for anything to be pulled at this time? Okay, let me see. I had a question on 9D. I think, yeah, 9D. So I'm going to pull 9D. And that was, I think that was it. I'll go ahead and move the balance.
Move the balance. I'll second.
Okay. I'll roll. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstained? Thank you. Okay, 9D. This is the award of contract for on-call construction management inspection for our street improvements. Mr. Rigg, I just had a question, or maybe Jared, one of you two can answer. This is going to be about $96,000. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, that'd be the maximum amount that I would expect to be expended.
Okay, and we didn't take the low bidder on that. I know that we're not required to. What do we pay our building inspector yearly?
I do not know.
I'd have to pull information from Michelle.
Yeah, and the only reason I brought this up, if we're going to spend $96,000 for inspection, why wouldn't we just have another inspector that works full-time for the city that can do numerous tasks for us and then also oversee this project? Just a thought.
It's something that we can certainly consider. So building inspection is handled through Charles Abbott and Associates.
I understand that, right?
We usually bid this out on a project basis. Street sewers, storm drains, but it's something that we can look at, analyze, and come back to you.
Yeah, because usually people that are in public works not only know about this, but they also know about other public work.
Mm-hmm.
They also know about permitting, they know
sure.
about state licensing, and they know other things. My thought is that if, you know, we're really short on inspectors in the city, and so if there's any way that we could actually incorporate this individual or even this organization to get a person that has dual opportunity to service in more than one capacity, rather than spending almost $100,000 just for one type of permitting or inspection. I'd like to consider that if you guys are okay with that. Is there any time constraint on this, Mr. Riggs, that we couldn't do this?
The project is ready to begin in August, and so we line this up so that the inspector is on board for the time when we start the project. We utilize the services of inspectors such as this for, it's kind of a surge in work that we have. The inspector, the public works inspector, and there is a significant difference in expertise between public works inspectors and building inspectors. It's a whole different code And our building inspectors could not do the work that this public works inspector is going to do, and the public works inspector could not do the building and safety work. The gentleman will be on the job 8 to 9 hours a day, and so it's a one-time need during the project. We would not have any work for the individual after the project is done. There really are no dual public work inspectors, building inspectors, and for the $90,000, that would only provide funding for somebody for probably half the year.
So our inspectors make $180,000 a year?
If you take the fully loaded costs, it's probably something around that. I would think that a building inspector, I mean, we pay Charles Abbott Associates on a percentage of a fees basis. My experience in working through Charles Abbott and through other companies, as an inspector, the rate you'll pay is typically $70 to $80 an hour, which does then translate into about $160,000, $170,000 a year.
You know, what was the award contract to the paving company?
RJ Noble?
Yeah, RJ Noble. Yeah, what was the award on this? How much?
$650,000 plus or minus.
Okay. You know, oftentimes, and it may be in the future, when we put these types of contracts out, a lot of times you can get the company that's going to come in. We also have them provide the cost of the inspection to help offset that with the city. I know that some of the major construction that I oversee with other agencies, that we do bring in the cost of what the project is going to be, and we require that whoever's bidding it cover the cost of the city's work for that. I know it's very common. Have we ever done anything like that, and is that something that we would maybe want to do in the future?
One of the reasons you have the inspection, one of the reasons I would want to keep it separate, is two different sets of eyes. I want to have my inspection company be independent from the folks actually doing the work, so we get an unbiased opinion. There are design build firms that do different types of construction, which it makes sense, which you have somebody come in and they do that, although most agencies will still have a resident inspector take a look at that. If we included it with the award of the cost for the construction, I'm sure they would just add that into the cost that they're going to charge us. So I don't expect we'd have a savings, and I think we get a cleaner, unbiased review of the construction in the way that we do it, which is the way that most agencies do this.
Yeah, and I understand that, but I'm not asking, I wouldn't be asking if they hire their own guy. I'm saying they could provide the funding for this to get an impartial inspector. The other thing, too, is as I was looking at the list of the people that bid, they're all really, really good companies.
Right.
You know, I don't think there was a person that has not done satisfactory work throughout the county. Just in the future, I think that by putting it into the mix, you know, maybe you're right. You say, well, they're going to add the cost of the inspector to what their bid is. But on the other hand, if you had, like, we had almost 12 or 13 people bidding, and if we put that in as a requirement, then maybe we could actually end up getting the $96,000, including the cost of, I mean, the $96 included at a prorated cost, and then we select who the inspector is. Anyway, if the council's okay with that, I'm going to go ahead and approve this or make a motion to. But in the future, I would like to see if there's a way we can save money by looking at some alternative measures. So I'm going to go ahead and make a motion for 9D. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move on. It is a consent calendar. We're now at item number 10, public hearings. This is item 10A. This is to adopt a resolution to amend Resolution number 218-19 to add a consultant cost recovery fees for crime prevention through the Environmental Design and California Environmental Quality Act, Class 32, and to schedule of fees and charges for the city services, Resolution 2020-33. And this is going to...
That is me, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
Thank you for the brief introduction. The council has a policy to recover costs from developer-initiated entitlements. And what this resolution does is add the fee for CEPTED, which is Crime Prevention Through Environmental Design, to the city's fee schedule. We're recommending adoption of this fee. That you open up the public hearing for any comment.
OK, Okay, at this time, I'll open the public hearing on item 10A. Anyone speaking in favor or opposed to this, please step forward. Okay, that being said, I'll close it, bring it back to City Council. The recommended action is 2 and 3. We've already done 1. Any questions?
None.
Okay, do I have a motion?
Motion.
Okay, this will be a roll call.
Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Ramirez?
Yes.
Councilmember Van?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Warren?
Yes.
Mayor Schauer?
Yes, thank you. 10B, this is a public hearing to consider adoption of a resolution to establish, and I'm not going to read the whole thing. Does that necessitate itself? I'm okay, thank you. All right, so at this time, we'll hear from, I believe, Jared.
Yes, sir. Thank you. This resolution, this item, in theory, has a number of parts. One, it sets the tax rate for future cannabis businesses in the city. As you know, in November of 2019, Stanton voters approved Measure A, which authorizes the City Council to set the actual tax rates. Cultivation, well, as proposed, it's your policy call, but as proposed, are the maximum rates that we can set right now. So for cultivation and nursery, that's $12 per square foot of canopy space. Testing is 2% of gross receipts. Retail sales and delivery is 6% of gross receipts. Distribution is 3%. And then the manufacturing processing is 4%. So that is resolution 2020-34. The next resolution, which was just provided to you on the dais right now, we had a mix-up, and I added the title twice. So it repeals and replaces resolution number 2020-21 with resolution 2020-24. This sets the initial permit fee, renewal permit fee, and most importantly, the $100,000 deposit that we were requiring. I wanted that deposit to be memorialized. The next resolution before you sets the maximum number of each type of business. So what we did was recommended up to 4 across the board. And then the third, or the last item tonight, is a policy regarding contact between commercial cannabis businesses and the applicants and city officials. It's really just to maintain, we're recommending that you adopt one, really just to maintain a fair, transparent, and open policy, right? It's a pretty lucrative business, and we want everybody to be on the same playing field. So what we're thinking is to adopt this policy, right, which would prohibit contact between the businesses and council, planning commissioners, and then the application review committee, which would be comprised of 3 staff members. Again, it's your policy call. We can answer any questions that you might have. But the thought as we move forward is, based on the tax rates and the number of businesses that you set tonight, we'll clean up all of the guidelines and the documents. Come August 1st or that following Monday, we will post the information on the city's website for a 30-day period. During that 30-day period, we will have a public meeting and answer any questions that the cannabis businesses might have. And then come September is when we actually open up the, call it the application period and window. The window will have a deadline, it will close, and then we'll begin the review process. Lots to this staff report, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. There is a PowerPoint, though. If you do want to change the tax rates, I just have everything on a quick PowerPoint that we can put on the screen and set the rates so we can all see it.
Is your PowerPoint specific to each one of these items?
Not each one of the items. Really, it's just the tax rates. The initial permit fee and renewal permit fee is set by our anticipated time. That I want to say was $2,600 for the initial fee, and then $1,115 for the renewals. And then the maximum number of each business is 4 across the board. But if you want to modify that, we can put it up on the screen and make any modifications.
Okay. May I make this suggestion, Council, if it's okay with you, is why don't we just take these one at a time? We'll kind of go where they're at, and we'll get your guys' input as we go through it. And I think also we need to conduct a public hearing.
Yes,
so,
sir.
Mal, what's probably the best way to do this one? Okay. So if anybody wants to comment on any of those different entitlements, then we'll. Okay. All right, at this time, I'm going to open the public hearing on item number 10B. Does anybody want to address the council on item 10B? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to close the public hearing, bring it back to the council, and let's start with number three, I believe, right? Jared, tell us a little bit about that, and just a quick review so that everybody's on the same page, both the audience and the council.
Yes, sir. If I'm following along, number three in the, well, I'm taking it from the recommended action.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, resolution 2020-34, which sets the tax rates for the commercial businesses. Again, these were voter-approved maximum limits last November, and as proposed before you tonight via the resolution is that maximum rate. So we can take them one by one and go down the list if you'd like, or you can adopt it as proposed.
If it's okay, the pleasure of the council, I'd like to take them one at a time so that we don't get confused and then we're specific. So is there a motion for number three or any comments? Go ahead. Yeah, we're on number three.
I don't think we should adopt it at the maximum. I think that if you look at our neighboring cities, notably Costa Mesa earlier this year, dropped their tax from 6% to 1% because they weren't getting the business that they expected at that 6% rate. Long Beach earlier this year did the same exact thing. They dropped it from 6% to 1%. So if our neighboring cities are dropping it to 1% and we leave ours at 6%, our business will not thrive. And I think that we need to set our business up for success. So I propose that we drop our rate to 1% to be competitive, that way the cannabis cities in our town won't be at a disadvantage.
Are any of the other rates at 1?
I believe that Irvine has 0 percent for taxing. I do think that we do have an advantage because we are going to be the first in Los Angeles County, and so we can still tax. Otherwise, I don't think we should go much further than 1%. Maybe 1.5% if we wanted to.
So when you propose, things look a little bit different.
I think so. And also, you know, Fullerton is right around the corner. They're right behind us. They're going to have cannabis very soon. And if we start out at 6%, we're all going to love it. So that's what I think. I'm happy to hear another one.
My only thoughts on it is the fact that we are a very unique situation being our location. You know, we're in the middle of 7 cities, in the middle of 4 freeways, and we're on Highway 39, and we're right on the other side of Long Beach, LA County. I would like to go ahead with the recommendation of the rates that are in the original for the following reason. At any time, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mal, we can bring this back to the council, you know, in a very short period of time, and we can drop it to whatever we want, or we can, you know, go down to zero, we can go to half, or we can leave it where they're at. I think until we test the market, which won't take very long, and we find out where we are, if our location here is excellent, and maybe we're not a Irvine, maybe we're not a Costa Mesa, maybe we're not in competition with Santa Ana, and I think that at that time, it's a better time to evaluate where we are, because we'll have tested the waters, we'll have an idea of what our tax is, we'll know what our revenue is and how it could, I mean, there may be a lot of tweaks. We might have to tweak location, we might have to tweak taxes, we might have to do little things to make it more effective. I don't think we should change what our committee has brought back to us and what has been established at this point until we try it. And so that's just the way I feel about it. So I'm going to support, you know, going with the established rate of tax at the highest level for all 6 categories. And then if we have to adjust it, you know, a few weeks after we open, so be it. But again, we have that ability to do that if we want to. Thank you.
In response to that, I'd like to say, why not start at a lower level and then increase it as our business succeeds? You know, once they've established and they've built the business, they're not going to pick up over 1% because they've already invested so much money in that. But if we start at 6%, no one's going to cut. Look at, I mean, we already have all these examples of Costa Mesa, Long Beach, all these cities who had to drop their rate very recently, just beginning of this year. And so I think we need to learn those lessons now and then have that rate low. And once they're in and they're established, we can raise it 2%. We can move it to the max. And we won't have to worry about the raising.
That could come off as a possible bait and switch. If we start low, then all of a sudden we try to claw back and get to a reasonable level, then there are those entities that say, hey, wait a minute, I invested into Stanton based on X, and all of a sudden you've increased it by 2 or 3 basis points. It's much easier to massage something down than to try to massage something up. If there were 0 cannabis businesses in Long Beach, if there were 0 in Costa Mesa, then I would support 0.12%. But they're there, and they're thriving, and they're making money. What's happened behind the scenes in terms of why people are moving that rate down, I don't know. But there are businesses there. They are not losing businesses. Now, are they not getting maybe the businesses that they projected? Sure, quite possible. I mean, the market is saturated. But there are none of those businesses are leaving Long Beach, or Costa Mesa, or Santa Ana. Is Fullerton coming? Absolutely. And so are other cities. I mean, 4 years from now, Weed Maps is going to look completely colored in Southern California. But it's voter approved. I'm a little concerned that if we don't go with what was voter approved, then it looks a little fishy.
Well, the voter approved is a legal maximum. It doesn't have
correct.
To be that
correct. But I got 0 calls. I don't know if anybody got any calls about saying, hey, I love the idea of putting this cannabis opportunity to vote on, but I think your rates are too high. I didn't hear that at all. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe my phone wasn't ringing. Maybe my phone was off. I don't know. But I think we're in a very unique position. As Dave alluded to, we have 74,000 opportunities at Pass Beach Boulevard every single day. I understand your concern. It's a valid one. But we need to be nimble to what we have here as an opportunity, not as what everybody else is doing. Just my 2 cents.
I had just a lot of emails of all kinds of cannabis companies wanting to come and stand. Their main question is, does 100,000, is it per category or is it overall? That's the big question. I could get it. But there is a ton of interest there from really high-end cannabis companies. I mean, I was impressed how many I agree. I think, I mean, 0, what's the point? Why are we even doing this? There is no reason. But I think we ought to keep it where it is and then adjust as we go. And it's very difficult to raise taxes. It's very easy to lower.
And you know, one of the, and back to the general thing, you know, when we all put this on the ballot and we were out, you know, letting people know about how important the tax was, you know, we didn't say, well, we didn't say that it wasn't necessary. We expressed the reason why it was necessary because of the cost to the city. Now, we don't even know what the costs to the city are going to be. We don't know what impact it's going to have on public safety. We don't have any impact on what it's going to do on any other businesses in our city. That being said, I think it's very too early for us to start messing around with the tax rate that we, as Rego put, out to the people to get them to support the tax. I think that's not being fair. That's like, I wouldn't call it a bait and switch. It's just that when you set a policy, you got to at least try the policy. If the policy doesn't work, then change it. And you know, I'll be the first to support changing it on the reasons that you talked about if it necessitates itself. But let's give it a chance to at least find out where we are going with it. That's my concern.
No, I would be more concerned about people deciding just to order deliveries from Long Beach than to go down the street and buy from Stanton. I think that is our bigger concern or our bigger challenge. It's a great what if. It's a truly great what if. But you know, if it truly is a drain on public safety, and all of a sudden our public safety cost goes up by $80,000, and we lost the opportunity because we went from 6 down to 1, now all of a sudden we're upside down. And one of the main goals was, number one, you know, the majority of people, when California put it on the ballot, voted for it in Stanton. So we got to give the people what they want, at least give them an opportunity to voice it, what they want. And then number two, let's see if we can capitalize on it. Let's see if there's a revenue stream. And it's kind of a win-win.
And just to refresh everyone, the vote on that was 49-51%. So,
right.
You know, we had a divided community on this issue. So I think for us to deviate from the recent ballot where a majority of the people voted that they wanted the tax, I think that we would be reminiscent in doing that.
Yeah. Now, Jared, monitoring revenue in, costs going out for public safety, how often can you report on that? Is that quarterly? Is that monthly? Chief's not here.
I was looking for Michelle Bannigan.
Okay.
We can, however often, my answer would be however often you want. If you want monthly reports on it, right? Or quarterly, whatever you want, we'll make it happen.
Okay. Cool.
Any other discussion? Okay, then I'm going to go ahead and make a motion that on item number 3, that we stay with the maximum established tax for each of the categories of cannabis sales in the city of Stanton. And we do need a roll call, I believe, Madam Clerk, right?
Fine with the voice vote, but.
We get a voice on this one? Okay, even though it's a public hearing?
Yes, resolution on order.
Okay, great. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any?
Got one no.
What?
Two no's.
Two no's, okay. So that's 3-2s.
I want to confirm we have a yes by.
Yes.
Yes by Mayor Shaver.
Yes.
Yes by.
Yes.
And a no by both councilors. Correct? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, we'll go on to item number 4. This is a resolution. Go ahead and take.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is a resolution repealing and replacing in its entirety resolution 2021 with 2020-40. And what this does is set the maximum number of businesses at 4 across the board. So that is 4 cultivation, 4 testing, 4 retail, 4 distribution, 4 manufacturing, etc. Oh, no, I think I skipped ahead. I apologize.
You missed one. You missed
one.
Yeah, too many action items. So this resolution sets the permit fee and renewal fee as well as the deposit. The initial fee is $2,600. The renewal fee is $1,015, and then the deposit per application. So a business could apply for a number of licenses. It's $100,000 per license deposit that would be required. And again, this is a deposit. It will be returned whether that license is approved or denied.
Anybody want to comment on the established fees? Okay. Is there a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Okay, we got a first from Rego, second from Carol.
Okay.
Oh, we need a roll call on this one or not?
We do not, but
okay,
to make
all
it
in
easier,
favor.
We can just to ensure that you don't make yourselves like the first one, Mr. Mayor, I can go ahead and do a roll call vote for all of these.
Okay.
So, Councilmember Taylor?
Yes.
Councilmember Ramirez?
Yes.
Councilmember Van?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Warren?
Yes.
Mayor Shaver?
Thank you, yes. Okay, we'll now move on to number 5.
Yes, number 5. Thank you, sir. I was one ahead of myself. Now, resolution number 2020-35 establishes the maximum number of each type of commercial cannabis businesses that may operate at one time at 4 across the board.
Any questions?
Mm-mm.
Okay, I'll make a motion that we have the maximum number for all 6 categories.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Mm-mm.
Okay, that passes unanimously. Okay, let's move on to number 6.
6 is a resolution that establishes a policy regarding the contact of cannabis businesses between city officials and appointees. Again, this is a policy call on council, and the repercussions, if determined by the city manager that it was violated, is that a license would be considered disqualified.
Okay, before we do that, Mal, can you go over what the ground rules are on this so that we're all clear on what we're getting ourselves into? Thank you.
Okay, so the Brown Act would prohibit any conversations between a majority of council members outside of a meeting on anything that will be on a future agenda. Here we're dealing probably less with the Brown Act and more with the Political Reform Act and conflicts of interest. What this policy gets at is trying to ensure a transparent, objective, and fair process by prohibiting an applicant from contacting members of the Application Evaluation Committee prior to a decision, and prohibiting council members or planning commissioners from contacting members of the Evaluation Committee prior to the public hearing. This is somewhat similar but a little bit different from the standard rules that govern appeals hearings before the council. If a council member has had contact with an appellant or an applicant before such a hearing, that member will have to disclose that contact in order to ensure a fair hearing. Here, this goes a step further and simply prohibits that contact prior to the hearing. This is within the council's discretion. The council can certainly tie its hands in this regard. This is the standard process is to allow contacts, but then require disclosure at a hearing. This is a step beyond that. It's not standard, but it can be done. And so you are voluntarily tying your hands more than the law otherwise requires.
Okay. So question, someone contacts me, leaves me a voicemail, or someone calls my cell phone, I pick up, and it happens to be someone for the cannabis industry. What do I say?
Well, if you're going to be compliant with this policy, you would simply say you can't talk to them.
Okay.
And that's fine at that
point. Who do we direct them to? They have questions.
The city manager or somebody who's not a part of the committee.
Perfect. Okay.
Is he on the committee?
No, sir.
So it's gonna. And how many are on the committee?
Three.
So there's three people on the committee. You're not one of them. So if we refer everything to you, then that's fine, right?
Yep.
What's the punitive thing if that doesn't happen?
Well, there are. So if an applicant contacts a member of the application evaluation committee, that application shall be denied. If a member of the council or planning commission contacts the evaluation committee, it's just prohibited. So there's really no teeth in that aspect of this policy. It's the same in essence as a censure, where it's a slap on the wrist, but there's really no penalty. However, again, if the applicant contacts the committee directly, then the application is denied, which is pretty significant.
I've been contacted by their public affairs representatives, by their marketing representative. I don't know why, but I mean, I've got details from all these sides. So it's anyone that's associated with that company, correct?
Yes. So the way the policy reads is it prohibits contact by the applicant. Now, technically speaking, any contact that has happened today does not contact by an applicant. They aren't an applicant until an application has been submitted. So your phone calls today would be allowed under the policy, but anybody connected to the applicant would be barred from having such contacts in the future. The policy is not specific as to consultants, et cetera, but a fair reading of the policy would apply this not only to the direct applicant, but anybody employed by the applicant as well.
So we continue to receive phone calls and have conversations until September 1st when the application period opens?
Ideally, you wouldn't. I think the spirit of the policy would be to stop having those conversations. The letter of the policy would dictate that upon the submission of an application, those communications should cease.
Okay.
So run that by me again. So once an applicant has submitted an application, that's when this becomes effective.
Technically speaking,
okay.
Yes.
One of the caveats to that, a lot of these consultants also do other things besides cannabis.
Yes.
So what if that person comes to us with a different topic other than cannabis that's a consultant like for a development company? Is that going to restrict our ability to talk to them on that subject?
No, this would only apply to a contact that was directly related to the cannabis application. So a conversation about a different application, a different issue, can certainly happen. We have to be careful because we are also implicating constitutional free speech issues here, right? So constituents, residents or otherwise, have a right, a speech right, to contact their representative. We can restrict that in certain circumstances when it could create a conflict of interest in either an appearance or the reality of impropriety, which is what's being done here. But if you go too far, then you restricted somebody from talking to you at all, and that would be impermissible.
It appears to me the intent of this then is for us as council members and staff is to not to relay any information from whatever source to the committee that's going to be selecting this particular the award winners for these. That's the bottom line is that then, right? So if we steer clear of all that, we should never have a problem, right?
Well, I do believe that after the committee makes its recommendations, the council and planning commission still have to hear those applications, unless I'm mistaken. And so it's important that the council also be clear from any kind of conflicts, because you will be decision-making body at some point in this process.
Right. Okay, so basically give Jared's cell number, right?
That's right, Jared's the contact.
Okay, guys, yes, go ahead.
Gives it more effect that we're in a position where we want to, you know, do this the best way that we can. If none of us are going to be contacting the cannabis industry, we don't have to make it.
You know, you're talking about people's ethics. If you don't have ethics, you shouldn't be in office. And I think that as I look around the room and know who my commissioners are, I don't see anybody violating an ethics violation. And first of all, why have a rule that has no enforcement? You know, if you don't have any punitive action, then what's the point of having it? And I think that for me to have that in place with my fellow council members and the people that I've imported to this board, I think that's an insult, because not one of the people that sits on this board with me or my fellow council members would violate this. And I don't think we need to police ourselves. We're not in a police state. I do appreciate the fact, though, that this is going to be fair, because we are going to turn it all over to our city manager, who's going to follow the protocol that we've established, and we shouldn't have a problem with this. But to police ourselves is ridiculous. And I would be adamantly opposed to that.
Well, selfishly speaking, I like this because I don't want to be bothered. Honestly, I don't want to be bothered. I mean, not that I don't welcome business and, you know, and decent amount of business, but I don't want to be bothered. So the fact that we will get that out to the public to say, sorry, I can't help and I can't talk and go to Jared, that will self-police itself.
Yeah, and that's why I was going to bring up my next point. What I'd like to do is I'd like for you to put that document together, what we just talked about, and make sure you get it out to anybody that's communicated with you over the past 2 years and let them know what our standards are. But I still think self-policing us is ridiculous, but I think getting the word out and letting them know that not to bother us is perfectly, it makes a lot of sense to me. Start tomorrow, I don't care.
Yeah, tomorrow. forget definition of applicant. Let's just make it a meet.
What's tomorrow? The sixth. Oh, tomorrow's a big day. Put down there July 15th. Yeah. So, a remarkable day.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I won't be forgetting that day.
No, we won't.
This policy.
Go ahead, Mal.
This policy is going to apply going forward every year. So it's important that we have a time frame as opposed to a date certain, because that date would change every year. So if it's 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, what have you, that's a better approach than having, again, a date on the calendar, because that date's going to change every year.
Fair. Okay.
Well, let's go with Alice, 60 days before, let's do it 60 days before application
okay.
date.
Well, actually, it would be 45.
So as soon as you get the application date, then you can go ahead and start your clock rolling.
If we open the process September 1, we're talking 45 days, right? September 1?
September, the application window that we're looking at on the calendar right now is September, right? So September 1, beginning and end. Prior to that, 30 days prior to that, is when we will release all the application information, the guidelines, the merit-based system, so we can start it.
30 days before that, or 45, you know, or I'm trying to think.
Well, you know what's good about starting it the 30 days before? If anybody does call us, we can say, we can at least let them know that we can't participate and that they have to go through you. And then by that time, you'll get the word out to everybody.
Well, and that's just it, right?
Yeah.
So there's nothing that prohibits you from starting it earlier, right? They can call you and council can say, you know what, we have this policy that prohibits contact. I apologize. I recognize it doesn't take effect until August 1st, but you know, I have ethics and I'm going to honor it 14 days in advance of that.
Can you say effective?
Okay, done. Perfect.
So tomorrow I could email people that email me every day and say that I can't talk to them because they need help contacting
you. Yes.
Awesome. And I'm sure many of them have already contacted me and copied and pasted the email to you.
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
Perfect.
So effective immediately, and then moving forward next year it'll be 60 days in advance of the application window.
60 or 30?
Policy call.
You find either way. Anybody make? Okay. All right. 60, 60, 60, 60, 60 it is.
Done.
Okay.
Motion on the floor. We would need a motion to adopt resolution 2020-36, establishing the policy effective immediately and then 60 days in advance. Moving.
I'll make that motion. I'll second. Van makes the motion. I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any object? That passes unanimously. I think we're on number. That's it, right?
Yeah. Yes, sir. 11.
We're all done. Okay. We have no unfinished business. We have no new business. At this time, I'd like to open the meeting up to any oral communications. Anything from the public. We'll start first of all with any written correspondence. Madam Clerk?
We have none, sir. We have none, sir.
Okay, good. All right. Is there anyone in the audience wishing to speak on anything that's under our jurisdiction? Okay, close that. Written communications, none. Mayor, Chairman, Council, Agency, Authority, Initiated Business. Committee reports, Council, Agency, Authority announcements. Council agency authority initiated items for future meeting. Council agency initiated items for a future study session. City council initiated items, discussion regarding the banning the use of safe and sane fireworks within the city of Stanton. Council member Taylor.
Now, but they're not really out on
and give them a chance really to come to the meeting and tell us how much money they made, whether it's really that much money as far as their overall goal for each year and things, so that we can have make an intelligent decision of whether we want to have savings in fireworks or not.
I'd also like to see real data from our financial sheriffs. How much money are we actually able to impose on fines about these illegal fireworks? Are we actually catching anyone? You know, I know we have a fine of $1,000 and $80,000. How many of those tickets are actually written? And, you know, how effective is that policy where we say we're not fining you, and then if anyone doesn't have to, so are we actually enforcing it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm open to it. Honestly, I'm torn. I see both sides to it. I'm very sensitive to the fact that, you know, in this day and age where people feel that certain services or opportunities for kids is being shortened, I'm sensitive to every dollar that possibly could go into the Boys and Girls Club and the Youth Assistance Foundation. I'm also sensitive to the fact that people lie awake at 3 o'clock in the morning if something goes bang. But I'm also very, I also know that the one that I hold in my hand and do this and sing the Star Spangled Banner is not the one that's going boom in the air. You know, I met with other individuals across different cities, and they've taken pictures, you know, with drones, and it's amazing what Southern California looked like. I mean, it like no other year, to your point. You know, it's unbelievable. And I don't know where they came from, but apparently there was abundance of them. Yeah, I mean, I'm open to it. I'm interested to see what both parties come to the table with. Honestly speaking, at first stroke, I think we're trying to warm the ocean. I think just by pulling a couple of boxes off the streets, I don't know if that's going to get rid of the big bang. But again, I'm very open to it. Sure. No, that's a great point. Yep. Okay. I'm open to it. Guys?
Yeah, and I'll support you on that, Gary. I think, you know, this has come before us many different times, but I think you guys, both being new to the council, need to get the in-depth study. Fire Authority does a study on fireworks every year, so that report will be available to you guys. I think it's good that we wait till that report comes out. The good news is that in the 30 years or plus that we've had it in Stanton, we've never had a major fire or major injury, which is good. Yeah, but on the other hand, too, you're never going to stop illegal fireworks, and the reason for that is because if you got six people lighting them off and they see a cop coming and they run, you're not going to give them a ticket. The fact that having legal fireworks go away is going to make it easier to catch people. That's kind of a joke because eight or 11 cities, including Huntington Beach and other cities, now shoot off legal fireworks, and that's just growing. And their cities, I know John took a drone shot, and Stanton last year, this was an extraordinary year, like you said, but John took a picture last year. We were the only city that didn't have the skies totally ablaze last year. And so I think our worst violator is Cypress right next door to us, and they have no fireworks. So it's not going to stop the fireworks. The reason why there were only two charities instead of eight is because most of the schools that normally booster clubs that have them didn't allow them this year. And if they were, they didn't allow them on their school grounds because of COVID-19. The churches and other charitable organizations couldn't get any volunteers to work because usually they're the older people and they didn't want to work in the booths. So the booths across the county were almost cut down by, you know, 30, 40, 50% of the number of booths. That being said, fireworks sales for legal fireworks were up 150% because people wanted to have something to do. A lot of it was because they were in containment. I think that it's good, though, for the council to revisit this. I appreciate you bringing it up. And so we'll get all the information and we can all make an intelligent decision. I have my support.
Club, and this year has been really, really hard on them because they don't have people paying for the kids to be there. And I mean, it's been touch and go every month all year. And they did get some of the federal funding, which helped. that they made, and I'll bring exact numbers with me last time, but I know they made a profit of over $40,000. So for that club, that was critical to their finances for the year. So it does a lot of good for the charities that you sell. And I don't know, I've read a lot of studies, and I'm sure staff will look into it and know much more, but safe and sane fireworks and illegal fireworks really don't have anything to do with each other. And so I don't think if we ban safe and sane fireworks, it's going to lessen the impact of the illegal fireworks. And I've been reading a lot of newspaper articles for even the state, because this was statewide this year. This wasn't just our area. And they're saying, you know, something has to be done to cut down on the illegal fireworks. So it'll be interesting, since it's become an issue, because it was so ridiculous this year, to see what the state comes down with too, see what they can do. But the cop has to be there to see them shoot it off, which is tough.
Just a question on the $20,000. What's the total budget for that? I can figure the $20,000. What percentage of the budget that is?
I would have to bring that up.
And you know, Gary, this year it's going to be crucial because they're not going to be able to have their casino night, and they're even worrying about not. They're not. You know, because even with their the fall autumn ball that they have for the last 50 years, they may not have that. So for them, every penny is doing it. You know, I think that when we always have evaluated this, I think getting the idea, I'll try to get all the charities to show you what they make, because I think in the long run, it was a large portion of most of their operating costs for some of the other organizations. We'll take a look at it, though. It's a great idea.
Well, let me mention that I did speak to Ann Schumer from the New Business Foundation about the fireworks fee, and she did say that about $18,000, which is almost twice more than about last year, considering that there are fewer businesses there that she's competing with. And she did tell me that makes a big difference of her budget for the whole year. So that is a, you know, without that, they probably wouldn't be listening to that. That's not what she's done for that. But with that, I'd like to say, what I'm hearing is that the only way you can catch them if you run through the fireworks is for the sheriff to personally see it. You can't just have a neighbor take a video and submit it.
If they're willing to testify, we can take that.
But they're willing to testify.
Mm-hmm. I remember Chief saying that the last time we asked.
Okay. And my problem is, I witnessed several neighbors on my street light off illegal fireworks. Days consecutively, and I called three different numbers to try and report that. One went, most of them were lies. One went to voicemail because they said they only respond during work hours, and if they're lighting a firework, that's probably going to be in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And so I want to look at our process on how we accept these calls and respond to them, because if our process is, you know, we're taking voicemails from people and checking them the next morning, no one's going to check that because they can't witness it or whatever. And if you're a resident, you're going to worry about revenge. You know, like if I tell on my neighbor, are they going to end up doing something bad to me or whatever?
Right.
Is there a way for us to report it anonymously with video evidence or whatever so that the residents can feel comfortable going forward,
mm-hmm.
not feel like they're.
And you know, you got a good point. And Gary, you know, when we discuss this too, I'd like to get, I'd like to come up with a game plan that's better than what, I mean, our plan gets a little better every year. We need to come up with a better game plan. I'll give an example. I can tell you 12 houses that every year, the same house starts 3 days before the 4th of July, and you might as well give them $300 for the show that they put on, and they do it hour after hour after hour. And I have two dogs that are very sensitive to that. Now, my point is, if I'm sitting there and I'm watching this guy for 3 hours, and you know who they are, the guys that live behind me, they set them off for four straight hours, and then after everybody shut down and there were no more legal, they shut off another hour. And then they shut off the next night for another hour. Well, you know, it makes sense to me that it's kind of, they're like sticking out like a sore thumb. There's got to be a way that we should be able to take care of that problem. So I want to address that. A better mechanism for identification and soliciting those fines. And you know, I got so ticked off, I actually went out and stopped seven people. that we're doing that. And I just went up to him, and this was before the 4th of July. You know, I think people alone on the 4th, because that's madness anyway. And I went there and I said, please stop doing that. I said, the neighbors are complaining, you know, my dogs aren't happy. I said, why are you doing that? It's not even the 4th of July. And you know, most of them actually stopped early. But, you know, maybe we need some community outreach, some education. I don't think anything we would have done this year would have made any difference because people had been cooped up. It was out of control everywhere. But I think we need to come up with a better game plan to help our law enforcement in the future.
Alice, to your point, last year we had a specific, we had a committee, number one, to deal with the fireworks issue. Maybe we start another committee this year, just with the craziness of COVID, it just kind of slid by the wayside. But we had a specific number for people to call, and we made sure that somebody would be answering that phone all through.
And that the way that number worked out, Carol, if I remember, it was a little problem because it was going out to dispatch, and we got put on the second half, so we needed to reevaluate that, like you said, for the future. You know, I think that there's a solution to it. I think if there was a real solution to it, like Rico said, it would have stopped by now. But you know, it's tough. It really is. But, you know, it irritates me because, I mean, I sold fireworks for 38 years, you know, for charities, and I really believe in them, the ones that don't make noise. But, you know, I cannot stand what it does to your community. It's horrible. And so I think we need to do something. You're right. But I don't think we should blame it on the legal things and the goodness from that. We need to temper it with what we can do to solve the problem. And I think we just got to get more creative. You know, whether, and I'm sure we can come up with some kind of solutions for the future.
Okay.
So if we're all okay, Gary, we'll go ahead and get that on the agenda. Patricia, please.
Yes, and then I'd like just for that you note that you have a e-comment in front of you from Ms. Laureen Berlin. It will not be read, but
okay,
that's
great.
There for you. And then also, it seems that we have council consensus to move forward with this item for a staff report.
Great. And then I wanted to ask Chief. Chief, when is our preliminary firework report comes out before the final? When are we going to get that?
Usually it takes about 30 to 45 days to get that back.
All right. Gary, you want to wait till that report comes out?
Sure.
Okay. Why don't you get Councilman Taylor's number, and then you can also let me know at the next OCFA meeting, and then we'll get that on the schedule so that we have that. And then the final, I think, comes out a little bit after that, right? And then why don't you provide him with the last couple of years so he can get an idea what the past history of the city's been, and give Alice a copy of the last, I'll tell you what, give him the last 3 years. And I think that will give him some insight to what's going on with the fire authority. I know what your guys' position is. It's very clear. I will say that you guys do a great job, though, protecting us. So thank you for that. Are we all okay now from that?
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right, now we'll move on to a report from the Orange County Fire Authority.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mal?
No,
Jared?
I do, yes. I have an
introduction.
I'm
sorry, Chief. Just give Jared a second here.
Yes, please. Brief introduction. Our new Community and Economic Development Director started yesterday, Monday. Jennifer Lilly is here. First meeting tonight, trial by fire, right? We didn't want to throw her into the cannabis mix, but Jennifer comes to us from the city of Brea. Spent, I believe, last five and a half years there. Part of that, I mean, a wealth of planning experience, economic development experience, and we are really lucky to have her. So, thank you.
Yahoo! Thanks, Jennifer. Okay, Chief, you're up now.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, City Council, City Staff. My Orange County Fire Authority's operational report for July 2020. In the city of Stanton, last month we had 300 calls. 16 of those were fire related. 259 of them were EMS and rescue calls, and the balance were service and hazardous condition calls. We had an additional 56 calls in the Stanton Incorporated area. Because of COVID-19, there were no community events last month. The Orange County Fire Authority continues to work diligently to support our fire crews and community COVID-19 crisis. Very early on, we implemented some policy changes and safeguards during this crisis to keep the firefighters safe. And as a result, I'm happy to report we've had no COVID patient disease transmission to any of our first responders. To ensure that we continue to meet the needs of our community, all of our fire stations, though closed to the general public, are fully staffed and operational. All of our support sections and business services are also open to meet the needs of the business community. And then our fire crews continue to work closely with our partners, the Orange County Sheriff's Department, to meet the needs of the community as well. I'd like to leave you with a safety message. While the COVID-19 pandemic is foremost on everyone's mind, it's important now more than ever during the stay-at-home policy to ensure that you have working smoke alarms and testing pumps. There were over 25 fire fatalities last week alone in the United States, so please make sure you test and check your smoke alarms. That concludes the Orange County Fire Authority's operational report. I'm happy to answer any questions you can
have. Just how are we doing with COVID-19 and within the fire service and within City of Stanton's public safety of people?
In the City of Stanton, we've had no reported cases of any of our firefighters. We have had some that have what we can consider a high-risk exposure that we put off as monitored. Right now, we have 20 confirmed cases within the Orange County Fire Authority, and we have 20 people off that are symptomatic after having a high risk exposure. We've actually done really remarkably well given the 1,500 employees that we have in the organization. We had 9 cases early on when COVID first hit. And we had a number of people that went off symptomatic after high risk exposures, all of which returned to work having tested negative for COVID. So we're continuing to follow the CDC guidelines. Right now, we're documenting and tracking anyone who's had a high-risk exposure. Within 3 days of the incubation period, we'll initiate the first COVID test. If it's negative, they'll continue to remain on duty and working active until we self-monitor twice a day, multiple times, actually. Anytime after we have a high-risk fall, we'll do as well. And then if at any time they begin to become symptomatic,
okay, thank you. And tell everyone to keep up the good work. I did want to make a quick announcement. I want to let you know that I got a call from RC over at Food for Less, and she donated water to me. And I loaded up to my truck twice. I gave it to the fire guys, got their water. The sheriff's department got their water. Seniors got their water. City staff got their water, and Boys and Girls Club. So everybody got a chance to drink up. So. Patricia, if you remind me, I would like to send a letter on behalf of the council and myself, thank them for the kind donation to our community. Okay? And before I adjourn, I want everybody to know that former Mayor Sal Sapien did catch COVID-19, and he's under treatment right now. So if you'll remember him in your prayers, I think he's going to make it, but you just never know. And, you know, he was a remarkable leader for many years here in our community and helped do many wonderful things like build the city hall here. So if you remember Sal, that would be great. And otherwise, everybody be safe, and we'll see you next time.